Hello and welcome to Your Legislators here on KRWG Public Media. I'm your host, Anthony Moreno. Today we talk with Democratic State Representative Micaela Lara Cadena, who is serving in her first term in District 33. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Anthony. I'm excited to be in conversation with you.
Well, we're glad to have you in studio. You were serving in your first term in the New Mexico House of Representatives. And I'd like to hear a little bit more about you and give our viewers a chance to get to know you a little bit better. You are no stranger to Santa Fe, but you were born and raised here in the Mesilla Valley, correct?
Yes, I was. My family's been in the Mesilla Valley for generations. My mom was from a community called Verino, about 20 miles south of Las Cruces. And my dad's side of the family's been in Mesilla, and that's where I had the opportunity to grow up and get to raise my girls now.
Okay, now I'd like to hear a little bit about your take on the 60-day legislative session right now. I mean, I know committees are being have been assigned already. You are sitting on the House Agriculture and Water Resources Committee, House Judiciary Committee, and House Enrolling and Engrossing Committee. I'd like to talk with you a little bit about the Judiciary Committee. Now, something that's came up there was that there has been legislation to have New Mexico vote for president by the popular vote. That's gained a lot of attention across the state. What are your thoughts on that?
So it hasn't come in front of us yet in judiciary, but we're seeing that very soon. So what I've appreciated, and especially since I had the opportunity to run during this last election cycle in November, is that there's been a lot of frustration about the ways that all of us may or may not get to weigh in on these big national elections. And what's real in getting to represent a state and be part of a state government in New Mexico is that we are made up with incredible diverse communities that include many rural and frontier areas. And as we know, New Mexico has a fairly small federal delegation in Congress, and we are not one of the states that votes early in the presidential primaries. So for a place like New Mexico, people still believe, of course, that every single vote should count and every single vote matters when we're making important decisions like this. So I've heard from lots of constituents in District 33 and certainly lots of New Mexicans, especially since I've arrived in Santa Fe, about how important this is. I also appreciate the deep bench of sponsors on that legislation. They include legislators that I deeply respect and trust, and I'm excited to continue looking at that bill, definitely hearing arguments for and against that bill when it becomes before committee, but it seems like something that I'd like to support.
Now, since we're on the topic of voting, I'd kind of like to get your thoughts about primaries in New Mexico. There's been a lot of push recently to have the primaries open in New Mexico. Currently, they are closed. Any thoughts on that?
Yes, of course. And this also came up a lot in the primary season. And in my way to serving in District 33, there was an open seat in the district. So I first ran in a primary election, a three-way primary actually, and then also in the general election. And what's real is that in our district, for example, we're a strongly Democratic district. And it's almost guaranteed that whoever wins that big primary race will be the person elected in November through the general election. And what I heard was a lot of frustration from independent voters in particular, and voters who have identified them, have chosen the decline to state category, that they were not able to engage in the real race, for instance, in my seat, which was the primary race in June. So they had to wait on the sidelines, see what happened, and then potentially support a candidate or not that was likely going to win in November anyway. So of course I'm grateful to have worked hard and to learn from voters across the district and earn their support in that primary, but it means a lot to me that we respect the values of independent-minded people and people who like to keep their political convictions to themselves and allow them room to step into our primary process in a way that that works for our voting system and doesn't disenfranchise anyone. But I do think that we're headed in the right direction as we step into these conversations about a different kind of open primary setup.
Now, you're in your first term in District 33. Your district covers the southern part of Las Cruces, the NMSU area, Mesilla, Mesilla Park, and areas around there. What do you see as the most pressing issue facing your district right now?
Certainly. And as you've noted, Anthony, I'm really grateful and humbled to be in this moment. And District 33 is fascinating. As I describe it, it does include the three historical communities of Mesilla, where I come from, San Pablo and Tortugas, and as you've named, the south side of Las Cruces and a great chunk of New Mexico State University. We also have thousands and thousands of acres of ag land on the west side of the valley, headed out to the river, and then south as you just about before you head into Stallman Farms. What is real, and especially as I got to campaign for a long time, almost a year, I heard from many of our families that were talking about what it means to believe in government again. And especially in the last 8 years, people in southern New Mexico were increasingly frustrated about in feeling that our state government hasn't been working for all of our families, and certainly not our families in southern New Mexico. So I had lots of conversations.
Well, tell me how. Tell me how. I want to hear
yes.
Exactly how do you feel it hasn't been working for families in New Mexico?
Well, a clear example that we got to discuss time and again was the devastating breakdown of New Mexico's behavioral health care system. And for many, myself included, access to behavioral health and mental health care services is something that is core to the well-being of our families and the long-term potential of our families. And for folks in southern New Mexico, in Las Cruces, across our county, when their providers were literally yanked out from under them, they were devastated. And there were circumstances in which meant that was potentially life or death consequences. For people who live with mental illness or have behavioral health needs, it's an incredible investment to build trust and relationship with a provider that can contribute to your overall, like I said, well-being. And when the previous administration basically kicked out these 14 providers across our state without due process, without accountability, they shattered the barely working infrastructure of behavioral health care in our community. And we haven't had the opportunity to build that back. Connected to that, of course, are reimbursement rates for providers on the Medicaid side, rates for providers on the private insurance side, and really making sure that we have the right kind of professionals in our communities, across our rural and frontier communities and cities like Las Cruces, to meet the needs of our diverse families.
Can you clarify something for me? You said kicked out, providers were kicked out. Are you referring to the 2013 Medicaid freeze, which impacted providers?
It impacted them pretty severely, in which many of them were shut down. Of course, there were some Arizona companies brought in the meantime, in the short term, in an attempt to replace those care networks. But frankly, and especially in southern New Mexico, they have also packed up and gone back to Arizona, leaving our families without the care they need.
Okay. Now, is there any legislation that you see right now in the legislature that may address these needs and help solve these problems?
Well, as one step, just so that we don't make an incredible mistake like that ever again in New Mexico, I appreciate Senator Mary Kay Papin's leadership on this issue and appreciate that she's introduced legislation that would mean, before actions like this were taken by an administration, that agencies being accused of fraud would have due process rights to make sure that they could address allegations, own up to maybe mistakes they've made, or frankly, settle things and be able to continue providing services in our community. So I'm in strong support of Senator Papin's efforts to do that. In the long run, we do have to invest deeply in making sure we have adequate networks of coverage and care so that our families across New Mexico have access to the resources they need. I'm excited to see Governor Lujan Grisham's new leadership at the Health and Human Services Division, the Medicaid Division, and I know across state government, people are taking seriously these crisis and urgent needs in many of our communities and are working to make sure we have the infrastructure in place to recruit and retain these providers that are going to be able to get care to our families.
Counties and communities across New Mexico have already been moving towards supporting a Medicaid buy-in option. What are your thoughts on that, and how do you think that could impact the around 800,000 people in New Mexico that depend on Medicaid?
Thank you for the question. It's a really important one. So a lot of my background is in healthcare policy and public safety. And what I know is that when people have healthcare coverage that's accessible and affordable, it means that they are much more likely to show up and get preventative care, and in the end, cost the system much, much less. It also, of course, if they get preventative care and if they have trusting relationships with the providers that they need, that means that in the long run, we're improving health outcomes from kids to working adults and to the elders that I believe we have to show up for as well. I am in support of the Medicaid buy-in idea. Because I sit on Judiciary and Ag, if that legislation is to advance, the first opportunity I will have to weigh in on that will be on the House floor. But I've watched the issue closely. I was able to attend hearings actually in Las Cruces at the New Mexico State University campus during the interim, in which some of the advocates and legislators that believe in this proposal were working through some of their early ideas to make sure that what ends up in this bill is the right fit for New Mexico in this moment.
So those that are working on this bill and this push for Medicaid buy-in in the state of New Mexico, do you think that they're thinking long-term, perhaps, if something at the federal level may happen that may impact Medicaid?
What I have believed and seen to be true over the last couple of years is that we cannot rely on what's happening at the federal government to protect our families, to make sure our families have access to the health care they need, or to ensure safety and wellness in New Mexico. So I'm proud that our state government is making sure that in the meantime, we have policies and protections in place to ensure New Mexicans have access to the health care they need, despite and in spite of what's happening in the federal government. Of course, what is real is the great majority of Medicaid funding does come down from DC. And I know that in New Mexico, we have really smart, invested policy people working to leverage federal funds and those funds that we can pull into New Mexico to the best extent possible.
Okay, now there is another health issue that I would like to talk with you about, and that involves end-of-life care. Now, the Las Cruces City Council endorsed the practice of medical aid in dying. That is something that you are involved with at the state level as far as legislation goes. I'd like to hear why you felt this was a need to implement this practice in New Mexico.
Thank you. This question is so much appreciated, Anthony, and I am grateful that I get the chance to talk about this issue with your viewers directly. Being raised in Mesilla, actually next to my grandparents, my Mesiero grandfather, who passed away in May after an incredible life at 91 years old. My New Mexican values run deep. And what I know as a woman, as a person of faith, is that I can hold my own moral views about these complex decisions and still trust others to make their own personal decisions about their bodies, their lives, and even their deaths. In the ways that I show up to this work, I know that across our state, we hold each other's personal decision making in high regard, and that New Mexico is a state, especially in District 33 in our rural and frontier areas, that doesn't believe we need lots of government interference in our personal lives. To me, this legislation is about giving those with a terminal diagnosis an opportunity to die peacefully, surrounded by their loved ones. Another thing that is very important to me in this, and that I've learned over years now being invested in the advocacy supporting end-of-life options, is that now that there's several states that have legislation like this, what research shows and the data collected in those states shows is that many of the people who pursue this option don't actually end up using the medicine, but that the accessibility to these legal options and these medical options is actually palliative in itself. It's comforting in knowing that they can have some agency and decision-making and control over their own lives and their own deaths, and that may allow them to face a few more really rough and painful days with their loved ones knowing that they have that small degree of control. And if things get to a place that feels like too much, that they can have access to this important medical and legal option.
Okay, now I'd like to move on and talk about some other legislation that you're involved with.
Sure.
And sponsoring. The Child Income Tax Credit. Tell me about that, and how do you think it's going to help families here in New Mexico?
Certainly. So I'm really excited about this piece of legislation, Anthony. As many of your viewers likely know, under the Trump administration and tax policy that he and the Republican administration passed through, they eliminated deductions on personal income tax. And this policy is in play for, as we know it, between tax year 2018 and tax year 2025. So what's real is many of our families, mine included, as we begin filing our taxes for the 2018 tax year, will no longer be able to claim those deductions. I have two incredible kids that my partner and I claim when we file taxes. And without doing that, that means that for many of our families, our adjusted gross income is going to be higher. Because the New Mexico tax system is coupled with the federal system, that means when we take this, what's called the AGI, the adjusted gross income, from our federal filing documents and move it into the state documents, that many of our families are actually going to end up paying more in personal income taxes in New Mexico. While I haven't seen the fiscal impact report yet, it's expected that New Mexico will collect about $40 million in additional personal income taxes because of the Trump changes. What is real is at the same time, New Mexico is a state with one of the highest levels of children that live in poverty across the country. So in a state like New Mexico, to me, it's offensive and dangerous to take more actual dollars out of families raising kids when every day people are working hard to make ends meet, every day people are living check to check, or maybe even not there, and don't have the basic